Well, what a week. What a week. If you've been watching the news this week, you'll be noticing there's been quite a few extra articles being put up because there's an awful lot going on. We have Brexit in chaos with no plan B, and there's a deadline approaching when this is all going to be tied up. They reckon this is the biggest peacetime crisis since the 1926 general strike. The trade wars are becoming a reality. They're starting to bite. The Middle East plan that Mr. Trump came up with is a non-starter. President Trump himself has been branded a traitor and accused of treason for the way he's been speaking to Mr. Putin. He actually sided with Russia against his own security services, which actually he's probably dead right. But of course, they don't look at it that way. On trade, Mr. Trump is on record as saying, "I think the European Union is a foe." Again, he's dead right. Global debt levels this week hit a record $247 trillion. That's what everybody owes to everybody else. Now, if somebody could explain that to me, I'd be very grateful, because I don't understand how everybody can owe so much to everybody else. Who is the guy with the golden pot? Because he's picking up interest on $247 trillion, which is quite interesting. It's also slightly mad, isn't it? The US-China trade war would seem to be simply a warm-up for a global financial crisis, which is what many people are actually saying. So what I'd like to do today is just make a point that ties in, frankly, with the update this week. We are watching prophecy being fulfilled. That's what we're doing. That's why we're told to watch. We're watching what our God is doing. And as we go through this, you'll see that some of it is pretty near impossible. But it's happened, and it's happening right now. This is a note from the correspondence course. It says, "Make no mistake, World War III is on the way. World Wars I and II were merely small forerunners of the destruction which will break suddenly upon the nations. This time it will be so hellish, only the second coming of Christ will be able to save mankind from extinction." That's pretty dramatic. It's also pretty true. That's why God commands us to watch. He mentions there Luke 21:36, which we'll be covering later on. "To watch world news so that we may be aware of the fulfillment of Bible prophecy." You know, Mr. Armstrong used to say that this Bible is one-third prophecy. And that one-third prophecy, most of that's for today. So it's pretty important. It's more than pretty important. It's vital. "And pray to be accounted worthy to escape the catastrophic events soon to fall on this heedless, rebellious world." We heard a little bit in the broadcast by Mr. Armstrong. It doesn't matter what Christ taught, mankind has gone the opposite way. And yet they still hold on to his name, don't they? The amazing thing is, the message hasn't changed. You know, you think Mr. Armstrong was called way back in antiquity, in the 1920s. And yet when God got him sorted out, and 1934, the first Plain Truth was printed, if you dare call it a magazine, because it was a bunch of mimeograph sheets, the message has never changed. What Mr. Armstrong was given in the beginning hasn't changed, and we still write about it today. "Is a world dictator about to appear?" was the headline on the very first Plain Truth, which I believe was written in January 1934 and put out in the February. And here we are this week looking in the update about the fact that the Nazis are still there in Europe. They're still very much there. They never went away. The correspondence course comment issue continues. "God must intervene. When we take a hard, cold, realistic look at present world conditions and trends, they do point to a fast approaching world crisis of war, starvation, uncontrollable disease epidemics, and the extinction of human life from this planet. Man simply has no solutions to these terrifying problems. The further he goes, the more destructive becomes his efforts." Mr. Putin has just launched a hypersonic cruise missile that has no limited range. If necessary, it can fly right around the world and hit a target. Mr. President Trump's new friend. This technology has gotten out of hand and beyond his capacity to control wisely. We've got this artificial intelligence thing now becoming where computers start thinking and making decisions and controlling our lives. It's getting pretty good because we can't tell half the time whether we're talking to a human being or a machine. World leaders, statesmen, scientists look at this terrifying world picture and admit they're frightened. They warn us that man's only hope lies in the formation of a super world government wielding all authority and power over the nations. It's funny that the Americans would love to see that. The British pretty much tried it with their empire. Mr. Hitler tried it. The Catholic Church want it. The Muslims want it. But they all want it their way. Or they wanted it their way. And their way was all wrong because they each felt the other was wrong. So he says, but the nations hostile against one another could never form such a government. It simply isn't going to happen. Writing in 1980, this is a co-worker letter, Mr. Armstrong writes, world events, I warn you solemnly, indicate God may move swiftly from this point on and his work, the work he's doing through us may be completed now very shortly. Well, it was at that time, wasn't it? It's just 6 years later. He died. When the resurrected Roman Empire appears, it will be a third world power, even mightier than Russia or the USA. It will plunge the world into the great tribulation of Matthew 24, and even that God will have to cut short for his own people's sake. God has set me as your watchman to watch the world events and to warn you when I see this great tribulation really coming. For the sake of your life, you had better heed. I say this solemnly in loving concern. Many are now beginning to preach Bible prophecies, but they do not understand these prophecies. The very key that unlocks this whole third of the Bible to our understanding has been hidden from them. Without this key, no one can understand the prophecies. They only mislead you, just as Jesus in Matthew 24 said they would at this time. The key is the true identity of the United States and Britain in prophecy. I don't know if any of you read the Daily Express. It's a mixed-up newspaper. Very good from the point of view of news, because they're hot. They change their headlines change as the day goes on. Not like some papers that change them once in 24 hours. The trouble is, as you read down, you start getting into the murky water of flying saucers, spaceships. The latest thing is time travel. Everybody's been doing trial. They bring these. They go forward 200 years, and they bring back a video that's all like mushy. Now, I would have thought, looking at the technology we've got and how it's changed over the last 10 or 15 years, that it would be like tack sharp in 3D. No, no, it's all mushy and hazy and, yeah, a load of codswallop. Going back to 1949, what follows is part of a Plain Truth article written by Mr. Armstrong, entitled Undercover in Europe, and this is in November 1949. Just a very small section, because you'll get most of this in the update. In the middle of May 1943, top German industrialists held an important secret meeting. Here, plans were laid for divorcing German industry, so far as the facts appeared before the outside world, from Nazism. They had to divorce it, because they were all in it together. The other nations in Europe simply cannot function economically without German industry and without German commerce any more than a human body can be kept alive without a beating heart. Think about that. Look at what's happened today in Europe. Look at the size of America. Look at the size of China, physically. Look at the size of Germany, tiny by comparison. And yet, when you look at the trade figures, the export figures, they're all pretty much a straight line. Amazing. In The Plain Truth, September 68, in an article entitled The United States of Europe Coming Soon, Mr. Armstrong asked, listen to this very carefully, because we read over these things, to find Europe becoming a totally integrated political power, to find Eastern European nations emerging in full industrial, economic, and eventual political union would be met with shouts of joy and exuberance in Western Europe. It would mean an end to the hated wall, an end of the tense, seemingly endless Cold War, and an end to the then Walter Ulbricht's communist regime in East Germany. Final year of Ambassador College, in 1968, the senior class were taken to Berlin, and we got on a bus, and we left what was West Germany, and you drive down a corridor. It's just a double-lane road with fences down both sides and trenches and all sorts of things to make sure that nobody got out and nobody got in. And eventually you came into what was then West Berlin, which was a thriving, modern, bustling city. We then got on the bus and we went through Checkpoint Charlie into East Germany, which was horrible. There was no light, no coloured lights, no advertisements, just dull, drab buildings with photographs of Lenin all over the place. People walking around, furtively looking around. It was just like a bad movie. We came back, we walked along the Berlin Wall. Every so often you'd come against a bunch of flowers where somebody had died trying to escape. It was different back then. It was not the world today. It was pretty bad. The USSR was perhaps not on a par with America, but they had enough atomic weapons to destroy the world six times over, and the means of delivering them, to the stage where the Americans were building bunkers all over the place to protect themselves. It's a pretty tense time, you know, back in the 60s. Here's a classic example where Mr. Armstrong understood from prophecy what was going to happen, but he couldn't see how. He couldn't see how it could possibly happen. Yet it happened. 21 years later, the wall came down in November 1989. Literally over a weekend. A weekend of madness. People look back on it and shake their heads. It couldn't have happened. It did. Germany was reunited just a year later, in October 1990. The Cold War is long gone. The Eastern European nations are now part of the EU. Why? Because the USSR was just destroyed. It imploded. Unbelievable. Nobody could have foreseen that. That's what you call a black swan. Totally, totally, totally unexpected. Walter Ulbricht's communist regime is consigned to history, and Europe is fast becoming a totally integrated political power with the signing of the Lisbon Treaty. Interesting point. Former British Prime Minister Margaret Thatcher bitterly opposed Germany's reunification. "We beat the Germans twice and now they're back," she said after the fall of the Berlin Wall. Boy, did she get jumped on. Do you know why? She made one big mistake, folks. She told the truth. She told the truth. "We beat them twice and now they're back. And they are back with a vengeance." Mr. Armstrong, writing way back in 1955, talking about the Holy Roman Empire, wrote, "In its final phase to appear in our day will merely be a restoration of the ancient Roman Empire, a United States of Europe, which we are beginning to foster within the confines of the ancient Roman Empire. We are building the Frankenstein monster that is destined to destroy us." And America has, for all these years, supported and protected not just Germany, but Europe from this perceived threat from Russia. Meanwhile, Germany's been steaming on, making billions and billions, amassing huge trade deficits with all the other countries. Not deficits, the other way around. They just export so much, import so little. This is why Mr. Trump is all upset. He said it's not fair, and it isn't unfair. It is unfair. But again, he's telling the truth. And nobody wants to listen. They hate him. They hate him because he's telling the truth. And the terrible thing is, the problem is so big, he's not going to be able to solve it. Right now, there's a dispute with NATO. Germany is saying they can't rely on the US to protect them. Because America is saying, look, come on, boys, pay up. Pay your share. Pay your 2% of your gross national product. They're not paying anything like that. So America is sort of holding back, giving Germany the opportunity to say, well, we need our own army, don't we? We need our own army. Coming soon, there's going to be a great split. When the end time crisis comes, only 10 nations give their power to the beast. It says give their power. It doesn't say they would do it willingly. They do it to survive. The others, including Britain, do not join the beast power. And Mr. Armstrong again wrote in US and GB in Prophecy, God will use a Nazi fascist Europe to punish Britain and America, and then he will use the communist hordes to wipe out the Roman Empire. We are entering a time of world trouble, utter world chaos. Can we see that now? Isn't it chaotic out there? It's, to quote a friend of mine, it's going to get much worse. One of the things we need to be watching is God's church. Mr. Armstrong asked the question, are we getting lukewarm or are we close to God? Now the midnight hour was approaching. Here comes the second coming of Christ. And he quotes from Matthew 25, the foolish virgins. And he says, then all those virgins arose and trimmed their lamps. And the foolish virgins said to the wise, give us your oil, for our lamps are going out. But the wise answered, saying, not so, lest there not be enough for us and you. But go you rather to them that sell, and buy for yourselves. Verse 10. And while they went to buy, the bridegroom came. As Mr. Armstrong puts an interjection there, the second coming of Christ had happened. And they that were ready went in with him to the marriage, and into the kingdom of God, the marriage when we would become the wife of Christ. Afterwards came also the other virgins, saying, Lord, Lord, open to us. But he answered and said, verily, I don't know you. I know you not. That must surely be one of those situations that nobody would like to find themselves in. Therefore, Jesus said, we'd better watch and be sure that our lamps are full of oil. In other words, the Bible. We have the oil of the Holy Spirit in our minds so that we can understand the Bible and know the Word of God and be close to God. Are we getting lukewarm or are we close to God? Well, that's exactly what we need. That was a transcript from a sermon that he gave a few years before he died. And then he mentions a problem. Men arise speaking perverse things to draw away disciples after them. Perverse, of course, means turning away from that which is good, turning to things that are corrupt. Now, from the autobiography, Mr. Armstrong writes, but in regard to Christ's church, even in the first century, there were false brethren and even false ministers. The Apostle Paul had called to him at Miletus the elders, the ministers and the pastors of the church of Ephesus, where there was a good-sized church. Paul said to them, and now behold, I know that you all, among whom I have gone preaching the kingdom of God, shall see my face no more. He knew that where he was going, he wasn't coming back. Take heed, therefore, for I know this, that after my departing shall grievous wolves enter among you, not sparing the flock. Also of your own selves shall men arise, speaking perverse things, to draw away disciples after them. Therefore watch and remember that in the space of 3 years I cease not to warn one night and day with tears. That's Acts 20, verse 25. Nothing's changed much, has it? There are many more New Testament statements of ministers turning false and leaving God's church, trying to draw away members after them and trying to destroy the work of God. We would not be doing the true work of the living God if the same thing did not oppose us today, persecution and false accusations. Yes, there was a conspiracy, but the back of that conspiracy has been broken by our God, and it was back then. But it didn't go away. It didn't go away. Because strangely enough, it's actually part of God's plan. A modern-day Ezekiel carries a message. This is what Mr. Armstrong writes. There is duality here. First, God set a modern Ezekiel as a watchman. Then the people set him as their watchman. Understand this. That understand this is in capital letters, bold, underlined, as he writes. In Ezekiel's day, he was a prisoner of war, taken from his own country into Babylon. The people of Judah never set him as their watchman. But Christ's apostle for our day has been set, first by Christ, and then by the people of God as their watchman. Never noticed that before. That is, one, to watch events as they fulfill prophecy, to perceive and warn the people of the 20th century, and of course we can add now the 21st century, House of Israel, when such military invasion is reasonably imminent. He would have to be one with facilities available for warning the whole nations of America and the British peoples. Who else in our time knows who are the modern lost 10 tribes, the house of Israel? No other church leader has this knowledge. Now you think about that. Back in the early 80s, the Church of God was the largest religious broadcasting organization on the planet. Nobody came near. I think in the end we were producing something like 7 or 8 million plain truths. The US and GB went out by the millions, and all the other booklets, the truth that went out there. The warning went out, but it fell on deaf ears, because it was the truth. God called a few people out that he's worked with. That's what we're talking to each other today here. Then in January 1986, Mr. Armstrong died. And then the deception started. Now we learned years later that the last letter that Mr. Armstrong reputedly sent out in January 1986 was fake news, to use the modern term. Did Mr. Armstrong write "The greatest work lies ahead" when he knew he was about to die? Well, Mr. Dean, who was around at the time, admitted that he actually wrote the letter. Here's an excerpt from his reply when somebody asked him this question. He says, "I was telling the truth as I knew it, and I felt we needed a send-off more than, quote, 'I did the work, so hang on till Christ comes,' unquote." He really felt he had done the commission and that the purification of the bride was to be next. That in the middle of all this, we find out exactly what Mr. Armstrong was thinking. Matthew 24, verse 14, was fulfilled. And the next section was the purification of the bride was next. He didn't expect a great work to continue. But I felt we needed a bit more encouragement as to send off for the next phase of what God would do. Now, when you read this and try and read it in the context of what was going on back then, I think what Mr. Dean is probably was doing at the time, he obviously felt was right. But it's been abused by people, and that term, "the greatest work yet lies ahead," has been the carrying call for a number of groups who try to do great works and build auditoriums and have colleges and farm programs and all the rest of it. There are several. Then he makes a very interesting statement. He says, "Salvation does not come from being in the right cooperation, but by our individual relationship with God." Mr. Armstrong always made that distinction, and I should have caught it as we worked those years, but WCG and the church always seemed one and the same while he was alive. We have grown painfully at times, although some sadly want people to believe their cooperation is the only way to the place of safety, and others at best will make it only by going through the tribulation. This is probably the greatest danger to the members of the spiritual body, judging based on who you attend with. Now, I thought it was just interesting because this is all part of watching. You know, we tend to think of the news of what's going on there. Let's just start off in here. Judging based on who you attend with is not the issue. It is not the issue. The real issue is, what do we believe as individuals? What spiritual food are we feeding on? The Bible is quite dramatic when it talks about people going off and feeding on tables of vomit, scrabbling through the vomit, trying to find a bit of something to eat spiritually. Are we sticking to the gospel once and for all delivered to the saints? Jude 1 verse 3. Are we holding fast to that which we have? Revelation 3:11. Because if we're not, we will lose our crown, and that warning comes directly from Jesus Christ himself. You see, what a lot of people don't realize, they've come up with all sorts of crazy ideas. What they don't realize is this. We have a spiritual heritage. That spiritual heritage came through Mr. Armstrong. It came from Jesus Christ, who got it from the Father. You can read that in the beginning of Revelation. The revelation of Jesus Christ, which he got from the Father. All comes down from the Father. So, if somebody's claiming that, whatever, you know all the schools that are going around these days, that their particular doctrine is right, What they're saying is Mr. Armstrong was wrong. Which means that if Jesus Christ has changed his mind, then it would make him a hypocrite. Do we see how serious this is? We were given the original gospel and we stick to it. So whoever's out there in various groups, that's the criteria they would be judged by, I'm sure, at the end. Did you stick to what you were taught? And not what some people, what Mr. Armstrong just mentioned, it, didn't he? The ideas of men. The sad part about it is many of these ideas are just Christian doctrines, you know, that are creeping back into the church. It all boils down to our relationship with our Creator. Think about it. God allowed this to happen. We had 130,000 members when Mr. Armstrong died. You could go anywhere in the world, and within a reasonable distance, you could walk into a church of God, you could put on your hymnal, sit down, and you'd get three hymns, an opening prayer, a sermonette, maybe a few announcements, a sermon, a closing prayer, a hymn, and a closing prayer. Didn't matter where you went on this planet. From New Zealand, all the way around to America, all the way over to Europe. Most of the, shall we say, civilized world had churches all over the place. And now, half those people have stayed with the original church, which has gone back to becoming a Protestant organization. And they're very proud of it. The rest have all split up. And we tend to look at this as being negative, but there is a positive element in it. Because first of all, it gives a lot more people a lot more opportunities to become teachers. Obviously, we've all got to watch what we're teaching. Right? That's important. But it also puts everybody on the spot, because there's no Mr. Armstrong there anymore. So you have a modern day version of this book of Judges. Every man can do what is right in his own eyes. So what is right in our own eyes? Are we sticking to what we were taught, or are we going off the rails? So watch the church. It will come back together. Christ will bring it back together, the ones that are going to the place of safety. But he'll do it. He'll do it. It's his church. I mean, you read about what he says about his church. He's kind of jealous about that church. He looks after us. Are we on the right track? Revelation 3 verse 8. I know your works. Behold, I have set before you an open door, and no man can shut it. For you have a little strength, and have kept my word. My word came through God's end time apostle. And have not denied my name. My name, again, Old King James. And has not denied my authority as head of the church. Verse 10. Because you have kept the word of my patience, I also will keep you from the hour of temptation or trial. It will come on the whole earth. Not far off in the future. Matthew 24, verse 45, you make a note of it. These scriptures, we all know them well. Who then is a faithful and wise serpent whom his Lord will make ruler over his household and give them meat in due season? That's why I thought of giving this sermon after doing the update, which wasn't exactly where I wanted to go with the update. It seemed to go off on its own in a different direction. And then I thought, well, this would be a good subject to cover because it ties in with it. Matthew 24, verse 14 has been fulfilled. Mr. Armstrong makes it quite clear in Mystery of the Ages. On page 157, 158, this is, I believe, the hardback version. Quote, after Jesus' gospel had been suppressed, replaced with a false gospel of men about a different Jesus, he said, this gospel of the kingdom shall be preached in all the world for a witness unto all nations, and then shall the end of this world come. Capital letters, this gospel has now been preached into every nation. We had the plain truth was available in obviously English, German, French, Spanish. I think it was an Italian towards the end as well. At least there's five languages. German, did I mention German? Going all over the world. The truth was out there. You can go into a doctor's waiting room without seeing a plain truth lying there, haven't you? People have said. I had the privilege of going and putting the very first plain truth on the very first newsstand in England. It was on the Bullring, W.H. Smith's, and the Bullring in Birmingham. And we went up there, and we put these big bundles of plain truth magazines. And I said to the woman, "Where can we put it?" "Well," she said, "where you like." So I just moved Newsweek and Time magazine to the Time and stuck the plain truth magazine in there. Took the photograph, and there we went. Of course, the newsstand program went on to be something pretty fantastic. I know most of you will know Danuta Turasevich, who died last year at a really ripe old age. And she came into the church. Her husband, who was partially blind, was going through, I think it was Euston Station in London, and saw the Plain Truth magazine and just brought her a copy home. And there's many people in the church that came into the church through the newsstand program. On page 291, Mr. Armstrong writes, "It is revealed in Malachi 3 and 4 that God would raise up one in the power and spirit of Elijah shortly prior to the second coming of Christ. In Matthew 17:11, Jesus said, even after John the Baptist had completed his mission, that this prophesied Elijah truly shall first come and restore all things. These prophecies have now definitely been fulfilled. The true gospel has been restored and has now gone out in power into every nation on the face of the earth." John the Baptist restored nothing. He fulfilled a very important calling, but he restored nothing. Jesus Christ restored God's way to his church through his end time apostle. This is what we've got to be holding fast to. Now, what do we really watch for once we sorted the church out? Well, the one place to start is turn back to the book of Daniel. Daniel 2. Seems a long way back, but it's a good place to start. Daniel 2, verse 28. I'm not going to read all of this because I think we're all fairly familiar with it. Nebuchadnezzar had this dream. And in verse 28, Daniel says, "And there is a God in heaven that reveals secrets and makes known to King Nebuchadnezzar what shall be in the latter days. This, your dream and the visions of your head upon thy bed are these." Now, isn't this strike you as amazing? This was roughly 2,500 years ago. A king has a dream. A prophet of God comes along and says, "I'm going to tell you what the dream's right. But it's actually what's going to happen in 2,500 years' time." I mean, really? That's what it says. "Tell you what shall be in the latter days. This is the dream. We will tell the interpretation thereof before the king. You, O king, are king of kings," verse 37. "For the God of heaven has given thee a kingdom and power and strength and glory. And wheresoever the children of men dwell, the beasts of the field and the fowls of the heaven, hath he given unto your hand, and has made you ruler over them all. You are the head of gold." He saw this tremendous statue, and the head of gold, he was saying, "You are the head of gold. And after you shall arise another kingdom inferior to you, and another third kingdom of brass, which shall bear rule over the earth." Because that's the Persians and the Greeks. "And the fourth kingdom, Rome, shall be as strong as iron, for as much as iron breaks in pieces and subdues all things, and as iron that breaks all these things, shall it break in pieces and bruise. And whereas thou saw the feet and the toes, part of potter's clay and part of iron, the kingdom shall be divided, but there shall be in it strength of iron, for as much as you saw the iron mixed with miry clay. And as the toes of the feet were part of iron and part of clay, so the kingdom shall be partly strong and partly broken." Doesn't that describe Europe today? Partly strong and partly broken. And whereas you saw, this is verse 43, "And whereas you saw iron mixed with miry clay, they shall mingle themselves with the seed of men, but they shall not cleave to one another, even as iron is not mixed with clay." I think I mentioned before, I was in the steelworks with my dad on a visit, and he took me into the foundry, and there was a whole bunch of stuff lying on the side.
And evidently what had happened is the mould had broken or something, and the actual material mould is actually like a compressed sand. That had got in among all the iron. And my dad said to me, he says, this must be something like Europe, you know. And he just picked up a hammer and hit it. And it just literally shattered into a powder. Quite amazing. And in the days of these kings shall the God of heaven set up a kingdom which shall never be destroyed, and that kingdom shall not be left to other people, but it shall break in pieces and consume all these kingdoms, and it shall stand forever. We are on the brink of that. We are on the brink of that. We're going to be part of that. We're going to be rulers and teachers in that kingdom. And it could be on the way to being set up within the next 4 or 5 years. Mr. Armstrong, writing about this in February 1985 in a co-worker letter, he said, for more than 40 years now, the plain truth has been proclaiming an outstanding series of Bible prophecies of something due to occur in Europe that will change the whole world and shake up the lives of every one of us. Daniel's prophecy in chapter 2 pictures 10 nations in Europe in our time right now as the 10 toes of the 2 feet of the great symbolic image. 5 of those toes picture 5 nations in Western Europe and 5 in Eastern Europe. Don't forget, he's writing this when the Eastern Europe were all being subjugated by the Russians, the USSR. Perhaps, I know you remember, I was 16 at the time. There was a rebellion in Hungary. And they went down in there and they just blew the place up. In fact, when I started work as a junior draftsman, my mentor was a Hungarian who had escaped all this mess. So yeah, it's to make a statement like this, even in 1985, still quite a long time before things got going, 20 years. This is further explained in the 17th chapter of Revelation, depicting those 10 nations of Europe uniting under the Roman Catholic Church. In the last decade, certain leaders in Europe have been working feverishly to bring about such a reuniting of Europe. Still going on behind the scenes, I'll show you in a minute. Then we come to a piece of information that you can get nowhere else. So how valuable is this? It's on the website. Pastor General's Report, November 20th, 1979. The time we are in now. I've taken a bit out of it. I've just pulled the middle bit out, which is the juicy bit. Never before have we understood these periods of 1260, 1290, and 1335 days. But it seems evident now a blessing is pronounced on us, God's church, who wait and endure until the 1335 days, approximately 1335 days prior to Christ's coming. And then he lists 3 things. 1. Apparently, this is the time when our work shall end. Now, looking at the church as it was back then, you couldn't have ended it in one day. It wouldn't have been possible because they had offices all around the world. It could happen now. It could happen now. We're on the internet. The internet is vulnerable. In fact, it would seem from what a lot of people are saying that we're headed for another internet. We refer to it as BeastNet. And then the people in BeastNet will have all the information that's been gathered, all those things on Facebook and everything else that have all the information. They don't want to collect anybody in the church or this, that church or the other church. They can just dial it up and just spew the list out. That's what's so diabolical about these things. It's absolutely diabolical what's happening. But our work shall end, and it's going to end, obviously, suddenly. 2. There will be a time when the united Europe shall appear, the revival of the medieval Holy Roman Empire. Now, that's interesting because 45 days later, that Holy Roman Empire goes charging on down and surrounds Jerusalem. We kind of forget it also takes over a good part of the Middle East and North Africa. So there's going to be a build-up to this. You know, you can't just move an army, 1,800 miles or whatever it is, from Germany or from Europe down to the Middle East. It's a massive job. So for those who are watching, we'll see this happening. We'll see this build-up. We'll also see, and it's something that's not clear at the moment, why? What's this army going down there for? Do the Arabs cut the supply of oil off? Possibility. because America dumped Israel, which we'll see in a minute, could well happen, and Israel's defended itself, maybe throwing a few nuclear weapons around, and they're going down under the auspices of the United Nations as a peacekeeping force. None of that's clear. But we do know this, they're going to go down there and they're going to surround Jerusalem and they're going to stop the morning and evening sacrifices, which will have obviously started. That all happens within that 45-day period. The interesting one is number three. We shall then be warned and readied to be taken to a place of refuge and safety from the great tribulation. We're told to watch, because you see the events unfold. What we've been warned about happens. 45 days later, the beast's armies will surround Jerusalem. That's at the 1290-day mark. 30 days later, the Great Tribulation will probably start with a nuclear attack on London and Britain, and possibly the same day or immediately after on the United States and Canadian cities. Hold on a minute. Do you think somebody right now could attack America with nuclear weapons and survive? I would doubt. I would doubt. America, for all of its problems, is still a pretty, pretty massive military power. And you saw in the news the other day, they're involved in military actions in something like 140-odd nations on the face of the earth. Some of them covert, obviously. Some of them are so secret, the government doesn't even know about them, which is a bit worrying. Something's got to happen to dramatically weaken America. In Britain, we're kind of like weak. We just spent a couple of billion pounds building a very special modern state-of-the-art destroyer, which had to limp back into port recently because its engine had blown up. It didn't like the hot water in the Mediterranean or something. Yeah. This country is a spent force. It really is a spent force. So I mentioned that about the build-up. Got ahead of my notes there. Yeah, but there'll be a build-up. This is not going to happen overnight. If you remember when they went into Kuwait, it was three full weeks we knew it was happening. They knew it was coming as well. Because you just can't assemble that kind of an army. Now, on the other hand, of course, the Germans have got the old Blitzkrieg thing where they just go charging on down. They could go overland. Turkey will let them through, don't they? Turkey's not involved. Turkey escapes. Of course, Turkey's a NATO power, isn't it? We really trust Turkey. They're getting F-35s from America, and they're buying S-400 missiles from Russia, which is really clever. So you can bet your bottom dollar the Russians will get hold of an F-35 very quickly and find out exactly how it works. Well, from what I can see in the news, some of the places where it doesn't work. Mr. Armstrong continues, we have reached the time just before the US of Europe restores the Holy Roman Empire under the papacy in a union of church and state. The present pope could very well be the pope that will trigger this and bring it into reality. Once the third great world power is formed, our work will soon be over. That could happen in a year, 2 years, or 5 years. But it could happen suddenly, leaving the whole world aghast in wonder. And from what we're seeing right now, it looks very much that what could be happening is that we have a dramatic worldwide financial catastrophe. And out of that will come a dictator. You don't get dictators coming up when things are going well. But here's a thought. This is where watching comes into it. And using a little bit of common sense, shall we say. We know there's going to be a strong right-wing leader in Europe. He's called the Beast, right? What about the Pope? Is this the Pope? I have a question on it, and a little tick that says, watch this guy. I'll tell you why. Mrs. Merkel and the Pope both want immigrants, migrants, whatever you want to call them, into Europe, both of them. The Pope's telling us they're all God's children, we've got to help them, and so forth and so on. Mrs. Merkel just opened the door and caused a catastrophe. She's clinging onto power at the moment by the skin of her teeth, literally. The Pope's even been accused of not even being a Catholic. There's so much upheaval in the Catholic Church. So that's a good place to watch. is what's happening? Mrs. Merkel is a spent force. I think she's almost certainly going to be gone very soon. They're out for her blood. And they've got to be. Because if they have another election right now, do you know who's going to get a bigger chunk of the rule? The AfD. The Nazis. Because people don't like them, but they like their policies. Because they can see their country being trashed on a daily basis by these people. Here's an interesting one. I remember putting this up and I dug around and on our news files. If you go into our news and have a look back, you'll find there are over 30,000 news items in that database. It's now becoming a history. You can go back, what, 10 years, is it? 10 years? They're all still there. If you want to check on anything, you can go right back. I remembered this one. Son of a Nazi leader's warning about Germany. This is what he says. Germany could return to authoritarianism if the economic conditions were to seriously worsen in this country. The son of Hans Frank, the Governor General of Nazi-occupied Poland during World War II, told the BBC, "As long as our economy is great and as long as we are making money, everything is democratic," said Nicholas Frank. "But if we have 5 to 10 years of heavy economic problems, the swamp is a lake and is a sea and will swallow everything again." Very poetic. What he's basically saying is, we'll go back to what we were doing 70 years ago. Nicholas Frank says he despises his father for the crimes he committed, which of course he would have to. While he was Governor General of Poland from 1939 to 1945, he was the guy that sent everybody to the gas chambers, basically. He was the overall in command. And tours Germany giving speeches about his father and the legacy of the Nazi era. Hans Frank was convicted of war crimes against humanity at Nuremberg and was executed in 1946. And this is not a new concept, though. And we've quoted this so many times, I think you can probably almost quote it ahead of me. We had in The Plain Truth, December 63, when Mr. Frank was a young lad, PT article stated, "So long as present German prosperity continues, the Nazi takeover will not be possible. But should any severe threat to that hard-won prosperity come, the picture will change and violently in Germany. Remember, it was the aftermath of the disastrous stock market crashes in 1924 and 1929 that fanned the flames of violence in Germany to pave the way for Hitler. History repeats itself, they say, and your Bible predicts a great trade war between the economic power in Europe and the United States, and it predicts a terrible financial collapse in this country," referring to America. "Make no mistake, Germany and all Europe will not escape unscathed in a hot trade war between the common market and the United States. Terrible economic disasters will result, and the result of such disasters, a new Nazi Germany." 65 years later, like now, it's happening, isn't it? Germany's prosperity is now under threat, serious threat. Nazis are back in the German government. Check this week's update. Because the two big parties are in a coalition, they form the opposition. And as such, they have control in certain areas of the government, or government policy. They're back. Trade wars are underway right now. You hear them every day. It's commonplace. And according to many economic analysts, a worldwide economic collapse is imminent. Just one little thing in here. The Americans have been artificially keeping the price of gold down to keep the value of the dollar up. Right? How they've done this, basically, is just to mirror the money system, basically. You have a £10 note, $10 bill, whatever. Basically, it's not worth anything, is it? Not enough to start a fire, even. Especially our plastic ones. But it's a promissory note. You give that somebody, they give you something back, and so forth. It's a way of doing business, right? But it's not worth anything. There's no intrinsic value in that piece of paper or plastic. There is in gold. However, you can buy gold futures. That basically means you buy gold at today's price, but you won't actually get possession of it for several years until it's dug out the ground. Right? That's 10 times oversubscribed. at least. In other words, one person in 10 might get their gold. But it's pushing the price of gold down. Now, what that's done, it's enabled China and Russia and India and Germany to buy up gold at a knockdown price. Gold should be $5,000 an ounce. It's barely $1,000 an ounce. So the wealth is moving from the West to the East. We have a worldwide financial crisis. The Chinese have already got a currency backed by gold. That will be the new norm. How much gold has Britain got? How much gold has America really got? Germany has got 8,000 or 9,000 tons of the stuff. These things have happened. They were predicted way back in the 60s. They're happening as we sit here today. So where's the real problem? The real problem is this. Hitler and his helpers are all dead. They're gone, all of them. But the spirits behind them are not. That's why things continue the same. It's the same spiritual background. Ephesians 6:12, we quote it, don't we, often. We wrestle not against flesh and blood, but against principalities, against powers, against the rulers of darkness of this world, against spiritual wickedness or wicked spirits in high places. And we prove that by going back to Daniel, when Gabriel said he had to get the other archangels, to go Michael, to go fight this Prince of Persia. So, you know, Prince of Persia, there was a leader of Persia, undoubtedly Satan. So, you know, we've got a spiritual thing in the background here that people don't understand at all. Satan's made himself a joke, hasn't he? Right. Isaiah 9:21. We here have a prophecy that shows there could be a possible fallout between America and Britain, and then both of them falling out against Israel. In the King James, it reads, Manasseh, Ephraim, and Ephraim, Manasseh, and they together shall be against Judah. For all this, his anger is not turned away, but his hand is stretched out still. The Amplified Bible says, Manasseh thirsts for the blood of his brother Ephraim, and Ephraim for that of Manasseh, but together they're against Judah. And the Living Bible, New Translation, Manasseh will feed on Ephraim, and Ephraim will feed on Manasseh, and both will devour Judah. But there does, whatever the real meaning is there seems to be some sort of a problem between, and we can see it now. Mrs. May's going off in one direction, Mr. Trump's going off in one direction, and Israel's doing their own thing. And of course you all know in Isaiah 10, O Assyrian rod of my anger. It's not just a thing. We know where the rod of the anger is. Excuse me. We better watch the Catholic Church. In The Plain Truth, again, way back in 1962, Mr. Armstrong wrote, United within ancient boundaries of the Holy Roman Empire, united by the common spiritual bond of universal Catholicism, held together by religion? Right now, at the moment, you look at the Catholic Church and they're being bombarded on every side with priests doing all sorts of things they shouldn't have been doing and financial irregularities and all sorts of things. And this is going to hold it all together? Well, you remember back down the 24th of March in last year? EU heads of state of government are planning to meet with Pope Francis in Rome on the 24th of March ahead of the summit expected to provide a vision for the future of the EU after Brexit. And then on the 26th was reported, Pope Francis has warned the European Union that it risks dying without a new vision during his address at the EU summit in Rome. He went to them. They came to him. The pontiff addressed EU leaders at the event, which highlighted the 60th anniversary of the Bloc's foundation. In his address, he warned Brussels faced a vacuum of values and was losing its sense of direction. So what's he saying? You want values? You want a sense of direction? You know where to go? Come to Papa. But is this the Pope? We're going to have to watch. Now, let's just go through a list of things here, which is not extensive, but it covers, a broad spectrum of the sort of things that we're watching for. First of all, and I mean this is from now on, not 2, 5, 10 years down the road, from now, today, war in the Middle East. A very distinct possibility. When this article, this bit was written here, it was last week. 200 rockets and mortar shells were fired at Israel on Saturday alone, and it won't take much to spark a much broader regional war. Now, what's actually happened in the meantime is the Jews decided that enough is enough. The Arabs have been sending over kites with flammable stuff on, setting fires to cornfields and all the rest of it. So they've gone in and they've sent the jets in, they've sent the helicopters in, they've sent tanks in, and they've beaten Hamas up quite a bit, and Hamas have now said, we'll have some peace, please. But for how long? For how long? You have Iran backing Syria. You have Syria challenging Israel on the northern border there, the Golan Heights. And Russia is backing Iran, and America is backing Israel. Yeah, it's a powder keg. It's a powder keg. Civil unrest in U.S. cities. Progressives are promising a summer of rage, and they are assuring us that all the anger that has been building up against President Trump and his administration is about to start boiling over into the streets of our major cities all across America. The snowflakes are out for revenge. They've been beaten at the polls, and now they want to take back over again. And I see in the news last night, Mr. Trump's own lawyer happened to record a session when he was paying off this prostitute or whatever it was way back then. Now they're going to have a go. That's going to be all regurgitated as well. You know, it's a mess. It is an absolute mess. And the problem with Mr. Trump is that he's a rich man in his own right. You know, when they offered him a salary, I believe he said give it to charity or something. He doesn't need money. So it's going to be interesting to see, but they're after him. They're after him every second of every day. It's incredible. But you know what that really is? It's treason. It's treason. And ultimately, there's going to be something done about it if things continue. It's called a civil war. Why it's called a civil war, I don't know, because most civil wars are very uncivil. One city singled out Chicago. It's a power keg, evidently, they reckon. The number of shootings that take place in Chicago is horrific. Absolutely horrific. It's mainly black-on-black violence. But, of course, you're not allowed to say that because that upsets the mainstream media's view of what they want to give us. We have the midterm elections coming up. From memory, I think that's just after the feast, I think. Isn't it October, November time? Tempers are running high on both sides. Who knows what's going to happen? Who knows what's going to happen? Mr. Trump has lined up somebody to take over one of the seats in the judiciary, the Supreme Court. And this person is against abortion, which would swing the balance. So Roe and Wade would get kicked out. And the Democrats are saying, everything we hold near and dear is about to be destroyed. Near and dear? Murdering 1 million babies a year? The US border with Mexico is another potential crisis point because the new president of Mexico has decided that immigration to the United States is actually a human right. Where they get that from? The trade war between the United States and China and Germany and Europe and anybody else is well underway. A full-blown trade war has erupted between the two largest economies on the entire planet. U.S. consumers are going to have to start paying much more for certain goods, and U.S. businesses that are heavily dependent on exports are going to have to start laying off workers. It's going to backfire on Mr. Trump because consumers are going to have to pay a lot more for the imported goods, and the American exports are going to drop, which means people are going to lose their jobs. As I say, chaos? Absolutely. It doesn't matter where you go in any of these things, it's chaotic. It doesn't make any sense. The deteriorating relationship between the United States and Russia. Russia has become the bogeyman that gets blamed for everything these days, and relations between our two nations are the worst they have been since the Cold War. Hopefully, Trump and Putin can change that. But it's a bit hard to be optimistic at this point, because Mr. Trump has got the whole military against him. He's got the whole security people against him. He's struggling, basically, to govern. But who knows? Then we have NATO. Is NATO going to survive? Dubious. Donald Trump has threatened to pull the United States out of NATO if European leaders do not immediately begin to increase defense spending. Now, he bullied them at this meeting, and they all said, yeah, we'll do it, we'll do it. And then somebody pointed out, if you increase it to 4%, it's not going to make the world a safer place. What it's doing is that the Germans are doing their own thing. They've been pushing for years. We've been putting it in the news article after article that they're forming their own military. And then to soften the blow, if you go back in our news, you'll find all these articles. German troops using broomsticks on military exercise because they ain't got any guns. Do you believe that? All our helicopters are grounded. We've got 184 Eurofighters and only 10 of them are operational. All our submarines are in the harbour waiting for spares. You know, that doesn't make sense. There's one thing, if you've been to Germany, you'll know one thing. Germany works like a Swiss clock. It does. Everything works. They turn out the finest stuff in the world, the Germans turn out. Incidentally, in the millennium, God mentions that Germany, the Assyrian, with Israel, Ephraim and Manasseh, are going to be great nations again. They are terrific people, but God's using them for a specific purpose in the upcoming few years here. Stock market. Markets all over the world have already started plummeting, and the smart money in the United States is getting out of the market at a pace we haven't seen since 2008. We are way overdue for a major crash, and if one happens during the second half of 2018, it definitely will not be a surprise. People with lots of money are getting out of the stock market. People, big people, people with billions of dollars involved, getting out of the stock market. The oil price has reached a level not seen in many years, and many believe the price is going to go much higher. And here's the crunch. If you can visualize a map of the Persian Gulf, there's a little pinch point where there's like a loop that goes around. It's called the Straits of Hormuz. And at their narrowest point, it's only 29 miles wide, just a bit wider than the British Channel, English Channel. Now, in the beginning of the war, the Germans had a gun that could fire, a field gun that could fire all the way from France into England, 22 miles. And that was 70-odd years ago. So, you know, the Straits of Hormuz is very tight. 20% of the world's oil goes through that area. If they close that off, then the price of oil will literally go through the roof. The Americans obviously would get involved, but of course then the Russians could get involved. It's not going to be a world war. We know that's not the kickstart for the world war, but it could be nasty. Then we have the political and financial crisis in Italy. Again, a mixture of right-wing people have got together, and they're kicking out the austerity. They want more benefits for people, and they want this, they want that, they want the next thing, and they don't want migrants. So this is putting a knife into the underbelly of Europe. That's one to watch very carefully. Italy's debts are exceptionally high, but it's too big to be bailed out. There ain't enough money around in Europe to bail Italy out. The earth itself is in upheaval. We've got 30 volcanoes erupting around the world right now. 30. And seismic activity appears to be escalating along the Ring of Fire. It says it's only a matter of time before we have a major seismic event in the United States. And hot off the press, drought. There's so much happened here that, with this I'm going to be doing, hopefully tomorrow in the news, I shall be putting a few articles up, trying to give everybody an idea how big, I didn't realise how big this drought is. It said, after just 4 weeks of that much rain, Britain looks brown, very noticeable from satellite photographs. Hosepipe bans are in force in some areas. The forecast is for 6 weeks more of heat And, you know, even here where we are now in Wales on the farm, we get a nod here from the good lady, the water supply is dropping. A few weeks back, we looked down there, the stream, it was a river. I mean, it was going down there at a federal lick. Today, it's a bit lazy. It's kind of like going downhill, but it's not making much of an effort because there isn't much water in it. Just this morning, we heard from our good lady in Denmark that things are so serious there that farmers are slaughtering their cattle. You know, that's horrendous. We had this in South Africa when we had a drought, when the drought situation happened. What happens? You get a whole lot of cheap meat because they've got to get rid of this cattle. So they slaughter them. And then the weather improves. So what cattle they've got left, they breed. And they keep. Very little makes it to the market for several years because the farmers are struggling to build their herd up. So then you get some very expensive beef. So it's going to hurt everybody. I had a little look very briefly. Sweden's fighting a whole lot of fires. In the Arctic Circle? Yeah, that's right. In the Arctic Circle, they are fighting major fires. And the crops across Europe, the wheat particularly, is being very badly hit. So, as I say, tomorrow we'll have a look in the news and see if we can dig out to give you a... Because it's not being mentioned in the mainstream media, because they're all taken up with Brexit and what Mr. Trump did next. And, of course, the USA. Devastating drought of historic proportions that already caused Dust Bowl conditions to return to the same areas... in the southwest. If rain doesn't start falling, farmers and ranchers in the region are going to be absolutely crippled. You know, the curse is not no food at the end time. It's expensive food. Make a note of Revelation 6:6. It talks about a measure of wheat for a penny. Right? Now, if you go to Matthew 20, verse 9, the labourers were paid a penny for a day's labour. So you all work up what you're earning and take it down to one day, and that's what you'd be paying just to survive on food. And you know what? It doesn't half seem to be lining up for it right now. Italy's wheat, durum wheat, which they make pasta, their harvest this year is 70% down. 70! Do you know what you're going to be paying for your pasta next year? The Colorado River, we've covered this before, the backbone of the West, 40 million people rely on it, 5 million acres of farmland are irrigated by it, it grows virtually all the US's winter vegetables. It's so heavily used that it doesn't finish up in the sea. It just ends up in a sandy pile and gone. There's not enough water left. They've drawn so much all the way up. I think it was last year they released water from one lake so they give it a bit of a flush. But normally, for the last many years now, it's never reached the sea. And then the other rivers that do reach the sea, of course, are another problem. We get the Mississippi reaches the sea, and this year it has created a dead zone in the Gulf of Mexico of 7,900 square miles. All the nutrients from the farm, the runoff from the fertilizer, has gone into the sea. It's drawn all the oxygen out of the water. There are no fish living. There are no plants growing. Over almost 8,000 square miles. Evidently, it clears off a bit later on, and it starts getting a bit more oxygen, and then next year it gets hit again. Aren't we crazy? Our bodies are basically made up of water. We need it to live. We need it to cook. We need it to wash. We need it for a dozen millions of things. Our whole life revolves around water. And yet we just disdain it. We don't utilize it properly. We don't look after it. The water companies don't bother. They're going about hosepipe bans in this country. And all over the country there are water mains bursting because they haven't been replaced for about 50 or 60 years. And of course, there's always the possibility of the black swan event. The one you don't know about. The one you haven't thought about. Things are getting pretty, pretty rough. Turn to Isaiah 46. If you would. Isaiah 46 verse 8. Remember this and show yourselves men. Bring it again to mind, O ye transgressors. Remember the former things of old, for I am God and there is none else. I am God and there is none like me, declaring the end from the beginning and from ancient times the things that are not yet done, saying, my counsel shall stand, I will do all my pleasure. Put it into modern language, my plan is a plan and it will not be thwarted by anyone. The other thing to keep in mind in Isaiah 30, verse 8. Now go write it before them on a tablet and note it in a book, that they may be for the time to come forever and ever. This is a rebellious people, lying children, children that will not hear the law of God, which say to the seers, see not, and to the prophets, prophesy not unto us right things, speak unto us smooth things, prophesy deceits. Yes, it's okay if your little girl wants to be a boy or your little boy. You can't interfere with them. I mean, it's their choice as to what their sexuality is. How dumb is this? This is coming from people in churches are preaching this. They're openly supporting things that God condemns. Get out of the way. Turn aside out of the path. Cause the Holy One of Israel to cease from before us. Yes, tear the Ten Commandments out of the courtroom wall. Take religious education out of the school. Oh, no, we didn't, sorry. We didn't take it out. We changed it. Now they're going to learn about humanism. And they're going to learn about Wicca and all the rest of it, because they've got to have a broad spectrum of religions. That's happening here in England. There in England, sorry. Wherefore, thus says the Holy One of Israel, because you despise this word, and trust in oppression and perverseness, and stay thereon, therefore this iniquity, this lawlessness, shall be to you as a breach ready to fall, swelling out in a high wall, whose breaking comes suddenly in an instant. Don't be shocked when some of these things happen, because you'll wake up one morning, you'll look at the news, and ba-boom, there it is. Just like to quickly look at the context leading up to Matthew 24, in Matthew 24. Matthew 24:14, the gospel preached. We've done that bit. That's job done. Mr. Armstrong did it. Mr. Armstrong died. Verse 20. Pray you that your flight, and that means fleeing or escape, be not in the winter, neither on the Sabbath day. Now that winter, that word winter, it means bad weather, basically. And I'll explain why. We can understand the season. If Christ is going to return on the Feast of Trumpets, and you count back from a Feast of Trumpets 1,335 days, you always come out late January, early February, depending on where the holidays are. I can't see any other explanation to that. It's simple arithmetic. Turn to First Thessalonians 5. So much in these few verses here. If we are watching, we will not be caught out. This is a promise. Christ comes as a thief, right? Or does he? Verse 1. But of the times and seasons, brethren, you have no need that I write to you. For you yourselves know that the day of the Lord so comes as a thief in the night. For when they shall say peace and safety, then sudden destruction comes on them as travail upon a woman and child, and they shall not escape. But not to his church, not to those who are watching. Verse 4, but you, brethren, are not in darkness, that this day should overtake you as a thief. Why? Because you're watching. You know what's coming. We don't know all the detail. But the details are getting filled up on a daily basis, aren't they? You are the children of light and the children of the day. We are not of the night or darkness. Therefore, let us not sleep as others do, but let us watch and be sober, be vigilant. You can't miss looking at the news on a daily basis, or you'll miss out. You could well miss out. It's amazing just how much is happening, even within one day. Mr. Armstrong wrote an article in the PT in 81, talking about watching and so on, and saying that it was important because it was tied in with the place of safety. But then how do we get to the place of safety is another question quite a few people have been talking about lately. Well, in his personal column, Plain Truth, August 1980, Mr. Armstrong wrote, "It's curious at this point to notice that a former but excommunicated angry minister now accuses God Church of planning to go off into the wilderness to die of starvation, following the example of cultist Jim Jones. This unfrocked ex-minister ought to read his Bible. It says specifically in God's word, in the 14th verse of Revelation 12, that God himself will provide these two wings of a great eagle, the means of transportation, and that we shall be taken to a place and there nourished, well fed, for 3.5 years of the great tribulation. This is God's doing, not ours." Because Revelation 12, 14. And of course you have the example of Lot. Quite an amazing story. I think it does show, too, that we are affected by the world we live in. The two angels come, knock on the door. Lot had to virtually drag them into the house for some reason. They didn't want to come in the house. And the men of Sodom came. They wanted the men. And he offered them his daughters. That's hard to take in. He's called elsewhere just Lot. Smote them with blindness. The angels had to drag Lot and his family out. God wanted them rescued for a reason. They got rescued. Literally, dragged out. I think it would be a bit more, I think we might be just a little bit more cooperative. But we have God's Spirit, don't we? Just quickly recapping some of the examples of fulfilled prophecy. The Berlin Wall came down overnight. In fact, one person commented that Mr. Honecker, the leader there of the parliament, evidently, got the flu. And certain decisions that came to him that he should have made weren't made. The border guards didn't know what to do. And that was it. Germany was reunited. The Cold War gone. Eastern European nations, part of the EU. Walter Ehrenbrich's regime consigned to history. German prosperity now under threat. Nazis are back in the German government. Trade wars are underway right now. Total collapse, economic collapse in Europe is expected by many people. Because they're clay. They're iron and clay. They don't mix. They just don't mix. You've got the Germans who are incredibly wealthy, and then southern Italians who are poor as church mice. Some say the USA is on the brink of a civil war. Britain is leaving Europe. The only question is, will they be kicked out or go under their own steam? Meanwhile, Russia and China and India are working closely on trade and militarily, the foundation of what would become Gog and Magog, the Eastern hordes. They're turning out. China turned out a stealth fighter from drawing board to operational in 2 years. Well, of course, they just got the plans from the States. Even the earth itself is an upheaval. That's where we are now. Can you see how much is happening? You see where it's going? And yet, to many in God's church, prophecy is the P word. We don't mention it. I remember back in the time when the Berlin Wall fell, I came in all excited about it and got really dampened down real quick by the minister, who phoned him up. He said, "Oh, well, it's not really of any importance." Not of any importance. Only the fact that Mr. Armstrong said it would happen 21 years before, and it just happened, that's a kind of like a bit of a, you know, giveaway. No interest. No interest at all. We are prophecy. Think about it. We are prophesied to be kings and priests. We are part of it. As Mr. Armstrong said, a third of the book is prophecy. And the final scripture. Luke 12:37. Just remember who's saying these words. I'm just reading them. Blessed That word there, if you check it up in Strong's, it means supremely blessed. Blessed are those servants whom the Lord, when he comes, shall find watching. Verily I say unto you, that he shall gird himself and make them to sit down to meat, and will come forth and serve them.